Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This question is from Joe Ostrowski at 670 to score. Earlier this month, Las Vegas Casino started offering drive-through services so Nevada residents can set up mobile accounts with sports books. Is that under consideration at Illinois casinos so customers will have mobile betting points at those places?
It is, and we're working on that. And we're also working on the ability for people to do it in person somewhere, to sign up for the app to allow them to bet.
Right, it's my guy JB. Just talking about sports betting today during the press conference. Just myself, Governor Pritzker, just having that conversation in public.
This question is from Joe Ostrowski at 670 to score.
Now I want to, Jordan, my first thought was, I'm going to submit questions every day. Maybe
Please
I'm going to
do.
Get his thoughts on should the Bulls fire Jim Boylan now or start the season with Boylan? Just submit a sports question just to see if they throw it in there.
This question is from Joe Ostrowski at 670 to score.
I'm going to do it under different names, though, every day. Some of the obscure questions about the 70s Cubs. They'll say this is Les Gromstein from 670 to score.
That's not his name.
That's what we were just talking about with Jeffrey Benson from Circus Sports. They've been doing the drive-through services, getting people signed up. You don't have to go inside the casino. You can do it in the parking lot. So Pritzker said right there today, he's like, yeah, that's something that we're working on. So maybe we will see that. I have a feeling at that June 11th meeting that we're going to find out that mobile betting is good to go from the Illinois Gaming Board coming up in a couple of weeks. And then after that, maybe we'll find out that people we'll be doing the in-person registration in parking lots or something like that. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670, The Score. This is The Score Rewind Hour. And I want to get to this conversation that Mullion Haw had with MLB insider John Heyman. But I want to keep you up to speed on everything. Heyman tweeted this about 45 minutes ago. Scores of MLB players held a call today and were said pretty galvanized in their disdain for MLB's economic offer. Reaction range from disappointing to disrespectful. Suggestion heard, it doesn't even warrant counterproposal. Some see as part of process, but time is short. I did say earlier tonight that I definitely think they're going to return, but when you see stuff like that, you're kind of wondering, oh, I don't know. Which players are on the call? Is this your high-profile, well-paid athletes making, I don't know, like $20 million a year like John Lester, $27 million a year like Jason Hayward? Was it those guys or the rank and file? Which players were on this call? Because disrespectful, I can certainly understand. You're going from $20 million to $5 million a year. Forget the prorated. That's long gone. Let's see how this plays out over the next week, and then we can reassess. But today, on what day is it? It's Wednesday. It's May 27th. I think we're going to have baseball in early July. I do. So let's go to that conversation with Heyman. And keep that in mind, his most recent tweet and what the players are talking about. But they addressed the owner's initial offer to the players this morning with Mullion Hahn, 670 The Score.
That's one of the complaints from the union side of it, that the MLB gave a better deal to the rank and file, the players making $1 million and less, and not as good a deal to the really rich players. And yeah, that's the union. One of the union's thoughts is that maybe MLB's trying to divide the union. But the deal does make sense to me in many ways.
So where does it go from here, John? What do you think the players will do as far as a counterproposal, and how much animosity has been created now because we went a few days and we thought that no news was good news and maybe that the lack of rancor was a good sign, and then we had yesterday. So where does this go now?
Well, I take yesterday as good news because a proposal was made. The union is going to look it over, and presumably the union will make a counterproposal. I have some people from the union saying that this is barely worth a counterproposal, but I'm going to take barely worth, meaning that they're going to make a counterproposal and get to work, because time is limited. I will say that. I understand that the hand-wringing and the belly aching and all that, and it certainly would be a big hit, but it's just the first proposal. The numbers are rather rough for the star players. To think that a guy, let's say Gerrit Cole, who makes $36 million, or was expected to if we had a full season, the prorated would have paid him a little over $18 million, and now with the 44% that he'll get of the prorated, he would make $7.8 million. So basically 20% or 20-something percent of the salary is what he would make. So certainly the star players, while I didn't talk to Gerrit Cole personally, the star players aren't going to be thrilled with it. The union leadership is not going to be thrilled with it, and they're going to have to work off of this, though. But it does make sense to give the bigger cuts to the better players. It's better to keep the minimum wage players, the younger players, closer to their salary. They make more towards a normal salary. They're well paid. The minimum guy was going to make at the prorated something like $283 million, $285 million. Now it's somewhere around 260-something million, I believe. It's 91.9%. So there isn't enough to cut there. If you're making $280 million, there's not a lot to cut there. And so this was the way for MLB to try to save money. That said, the union, I think, will certainly come back with numbers that are vastly different. Though the setup, the format, I think makes sense.
I got to tell you, if I'm the union, you just counter, say, okay, this is fine, but the stars get their money in a deferred payment later on, and you're done.
Yeah,
and
that's what the union wanted to do, but that doesn't do much for MLB to still get the whole salary. I do work at MLB, but I am normally sympathetic to employees, as I've always been an employee. But I do see that the owners will be losing money this year, no matter how you slice it. I get that they've made a lot of money in other years. This is a pandemic, a rare occurrence, and some people say they just need to take a hit. But I do think that's something the players would like to do, is just defer it. But I think the teams are already going to be taking on a lot of debt. To add more debt, I don't think they want to do that. And the main thing is that that's really not giving them a saving. So I do think the union's going to have to come back with something less than the prorated, certainly more than this, but less than the prorated. And there'll be a compromise, something right in the middle, perhaps.
John, deadlines spur action, and in typical times, that's the truth. These aren't typical times, so I don't know what the deadline really is. Is there an artificial deadline that would be, the time by which they want to have an agreement? And what role will, say, if any, the NHL coming to, making an announcement about a returning to play? By the end of the week, the NBA may be at the same podium making a similar type of an announcement from Adam Silver. Do those things have any effect on this artificial deadline?
Yeah, I don't think they'll have any effect on MLB. MLB knows it needs to make a deal and needs to not let the economics blow up the season. If the health data gets worse, certainly not. But if the health data gets worse and they can't play due to the risk factor, That's one thing. But they know now, going into this whole thing, that they cannot let the economics blow it up. That said, they're on a deadline here. It was a little bit easier for NHL or NBA. Their players have made their money this year. The MLB was in a different spot. The season hadn't begun, so their players hadn't made any money. So it's a little more difficult for MLB. I do think MLB will still be able to make a deal. Rob Manfred, when he was the lead negotiator, and since he's been the commissioner, they've not had work stoppages since 1994, which we all remember. So 25 years of no work stoppage is a pretty good record if you go back to the baseball history. In terms of the deadline, yeah, it's pretty tight. I mean, they're calling June 1st a soft deadline and saying June 10th is the date they want to get to spring training. I think June 10th is right. I think that's the hard deadline, or maybe a couple days before that. But June 1st is a very soft deadline. So I don't think we should all panic if June 1st comes and goes, which I expect it to. But I think once you get close to June 10th and there's no deal, that's when we start to panic.
John, I've been doing some yard work, starting projects I have no intention of ever finishing. And as a result, I've been kind of daydreaming about different roster issues and questions that come up. And I know this, we got to get this resolved first, but I also feel that I need a little explanation. Just from a baseball standpoint, if you have guys that are coming back from Tommy John surgery, or if you have players that have been injured and are available this year, but you thought you'd play them at the minor league level and now there's going to be no minor league level, do you use those players to fill out your 50-man roster, your backup 20 to the 30 you're going to take? How do you make sure that you get the mileage on the arms needed in order to be able to use them in the future? How do you handle
that? Yeah, I'm right. There's tough questions for everybody here in this situation. The rosters are going to be expanded, which will alleviate some of the issues that the pitchers might encounter, because they're not going to be ready to throw 6-7 innings like they would normally at a spring training. So the rosters are expanded. You'll have 30 on the roster. You'll have a big taxi squad. I agree. Well, they haven't announced no minor leagues. I mean, some teams are already releasing their minor leaguers, basically. So I think they all basically understand that there's very likely going to be no minor leagues. That said, there's going to be a taxi squad, and that taxi squad will work out, and they can throw simulated games. It's not real games, but they'll just have to keep an eye on it and do the best they can. I mean, this isn't a good deal for anybody, and you're right about the injured players coming back. It's a little bit more complicated for them as well.
The A's became the first team yesterday to stop paying those minor leaguers, John, as we alluded to. And, the future of minor league baseball this summer is bleak. And do you think other teams will follow suit? What does that do to the development of some of these prospects? It sort of obviously interrupts a lot of the progress. It halts some of the development. And you wonder how permanent that will be.
Yes. Now, the guys that they're not paying or letting go, they're now free agents, presumably. So these are players they probably didn't look at as prospects. As we said, there's 30 on the roster. There's a taxi squad. I'm not sure yet if that's a 20 or 30. So you can go 50 or 60 deep on your roster. Now, is it possible there are talented players beyond your 50 or 60? I guess it's possible. But they're taking the risk that very few of those players who are being basically released are not going to turn out. It is complicated, though, because let's say you've got a star prospect. Let's say, I should probably think of Chicago one, but let's say I'm in Miami. The Marlins have J.J. Bleday. They gave him $5 million last year as a top five or so pick in the draft. He's not going to have minor leagues this year. So what do they do with him? He's not ready to play in the major leagues. He's being a 30, he's going to have to be on the taxi squad. They're not going to release him or let him do nothing. So he's going to be playing with some guys who are AAA type players. It's going to be all over the map. It's not going to be a minor league season. He's not going to have games. That's true, too, of the Cubs and the White Sox top picks. It's bad for everybody what's gone on. But, to have minor league season, I think, would be very, very difficult, because minor league season depends on fans and attendance. There isn't TV for the most part, and certainly not TV money. And to take any risk at all and to have that expense of making sure the health protocols are all set, just would be too much, too involved, too difficult, too expensive. So that's the reason we're not going to see minor league baseball this year.
And so as a result of that, John, if you're a general manager, would you take those top prospects? Say you're the Dodgers. Would you load your, you know, 20-man or 30-man taxi squad with all of your young stars that you want to keep an eye on and you want them to keep moving forward? Or would you be worried about having rank-and-file guys? And I guess it's a combination. But, you know, presumably somebody's going to get sick at some point or someone's going to get hurt, and you got to move someone that can help in the immediate future. How do you balance that if you're a general manager?
Yeah, let's say there are 30 taxi guys. And again, I'm not sure if it's settled at 20 or 30 yet. Nothing's really settled yet, but it's 20 or 30. Let's say it's 20. You take your 10 best prospects, just hypothetically 10 best prospects plus 10 AAA players who are ready to go and help your team if there's an injury. So you'll have 20 players who you're interested in, care about, and may be valuable to you this year and going forward, and utilize them with your taxi squad in your spring sight. Yeah, it's, like I said, it's not good for anybody, and I get where everybody's coming from. It's particularly tough right now today on the star players who are making, as I said, $25 million and up. They're taking a monster hit, whether they're going to be making 30% of their salary or 25%, or in the case of Cole and Trout, 20% of their salary. That's tough. But as I said, it's better than we think. I understand that there's publicity that the unions live it and all this, but let's keep in mind 65%, nearly two thirds of the players make $1 million or less. Under the, even this offer, which will not be accepted, and the MLB will negotiate off, but even in this offer, those players will make 85% or more of the prorated salary. So the guys were making, were expected to make $1 million. If they were going to get the full prorated, they would have gotten a little over $500,000. Now they'll get $434,000. So they're not going to object that much. And if they took just a vote of it, there'll be a lot of players. Whether you, I know the publicity today is the union's livid and all this, and the players are livid. Well, those are the star players, and that's the union leadership. And that will certainly cause them not to accept this. Two-thirds of the players may not hate this deal that much. Like I said, it's not going to be accepted. They will work off of this. MLB is willing to do more, I'm sure. But I do consider this a start, and I think we don't need to pay – too much attention to the hand-wringing and the belly aching that's going to go on throughout the week from both sides.
That's the key point, John. You're right. I mean, when you look at 65% of Major League Baseball players making $1 million or less, it's the same dynamic that was in place with the NFL when they just recently passed a CBA with their rank and file, as the stars of the sport were spoke loudly against maybe the ideas and some of the principles involved in the offer. It still passed, and there's still a lot of hand-wringing about that, but it did as well, and I just wonder if the silent majority is the people that we won't hear from today. Do they feel differently about this deal than a lot of the guys whose names we recognize?
Yeah, they absolutely do feel differently, and I've been in touch with a couple of those type players, and they don't think it's so bad, and they're saying, let's get ready to go and play. However, I do think in this case, the MLB union leadership is pretty strong. The players on the negotiating committee are Scherzer, Andrew Miller, star players making not just seven figures, but eight figures. So I do think this will not be accepted, and they will negotiate off of this. But in a way, it was smart for MLB. It's actually, in a way, proper not to cut the guys who are making more of a normal type salary. If you're already down to $280,000, obviously that's a very good salary still, but these players' careers are limited in time. So, you know, it's not, when you consider that most players don't play more than 5 to 7 years, it's not outrageous. They didn't cut them so much, you know, basically just 8% on the minimum salary. So, in a way, that's a kind way to do it, because obviously Gerrit Cole and Trout and Harper and those guys, they can afford the cut. But and also, if you're going to cut the guys who are already down to 280,000, what are you going to cut them? It's not going to save them. They'll be very much money. The only way they were going to save money is to cut Mike Trout and Max Scherzer and this guy's making $30 million plus. So the offer made a lot of sense in a lot of ways that people aren't really talking about today. They're too focused on the fact that team leadership is upset. The star players are upset. To me, it's a starting point. And to me, looking at the history of MLB, they will get something done economically. If we don't play, I don't believe it's going to be because of the economics. It's going to be because the health data went the wrong direction.
MLB insider John Heyman this morning with Mully and Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score. This segment brought to you by DuckDuckGo Privacy. Fed up with companies selling your data? DuckDuckGo is on it. They help millions of people like you take back their privacy online. With one download, you can search and browse privately, avoiding trackers all for free. DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. This is Joe Ostrowski on Sports Radio 670 The Score during the Score Rewind Hour. And we've heard about the NBA's plan, right? But you don't have all the details. We've heard one location, Disney World, don't have any details about where exactly on the Disney World property it's going to take place, and when is it all going to happen? Well, we got some of those details today on the Dan Bernstein Show with a guest that has been following this from the very start and throwing out the idea of Disney World for the last couple of months. We'll hear from him next on 670 The Score and the Radio.com app.
This question is from Joe Ostrowski at 670 The Score.
So, is that Ostrowski?
Ridiculous. Jordan Malley producing tonight. I am Joe Ostrowski on 670 The Score. Thanks for hanging out. Score Rewind Hour. Let's get to some NBA and some logistics here. How this would work out. We don't have anything official, but I think we're all well aware, if you've been following the reporting at all, that the NBA is going to play in one city. They're going to go down to Orlando, play at Disney World. Bubble basketball will be here for you. Don't know when, don't know how many teams, don't know the format, but it certainly seems like that's what's going to happen. It would shock everyone if there's some sort of other plan that comes out of the blue here. But Keith Smith from Yahoo Sports has been covering this from the very beginning, and he threw this out as an idea way back in April because he knows all about Disney World. He gets the ins and outs, and he explained why on the Dan Bernstein Show.
For me, I worked for Disney for nearly 20 years before, 3 weeks before the season went on pause is when I left the company to cover the NBA full time. And so my timing's nothing if not impeccable there. But prior to that, I had been with Disney for 20 years. And as all these ideas of single site plans started coming out, I've been to Las Vegas a bunch of times for Summer League and I love what they do. But I kept thinking, you know, Disney has all the same things and it's private property and they can do that. And that's when I got together with my editor at Yahoo and said, hey, I have this idea. What do you think? And he said, yeah, let's run with it. And we put it out and it published on April 16th.
You put out a pair of juxtaposed maps today that absolutely blew my mind, because the number of times I've been to Disney and been to the various parks and been around the area, I never realized that just generally adding up the total land area, it is approximately the size of the island of Manhattan. That is amazing to consider when you think about how much property we're dealing with.
Yeah, it's 39 square miles. It's actually twice the size of Manhattan proper and roughly the size of San Francisco. And how I put it into terms for my simple brain to understand is I live on one end of the property, and to the other end, it's about a 20-minute car ride with no traffic or anything like that. That's how long it takes. So it's a massive property that has, you know, lots and lots of space, and there's a lot of questions of, you know, how could you do this and be open and those things. And I think once you start to put a little scale to it, people start to understand a little bit better.
As you understand it, how true a bubble would it be? Would there be day-to-day hotel workers or food service workers who would be going home to their families outside the property, or would everybody indeed be kept on property?
Yeah, that's all still developing and still kind of coming together. There is the option. Disney, as part of their proposal, from what I was told, said, you know, we can ask our cast members, that's Disney lingo for employees, to shelter in place with the NBA so that they aren't moving back and forth. That's not enough. Common thing here in Florida. Fortunately, one of the realities is hurricanes. And when we have those, we have to shelter in place as cast members in the various resorts and those locations with the guests to make sure that they're taken care of. So they would be able to get enough people to volunteer to do that, to stay inside the quote unquote bubble or campus or whatever we're using as the buzzword today. Because my read on the situation from what I've been told is they want to keep it fairly closed. Now, I've heard the players say, there's going to be people are going to, they're not going to have to stay. You know, a couple players have said that. And I've been told there's going to be a lot of freedom of movement within the areas that are accessible to the NBA, but it's not a, you know, head off to downtown Orlando, which is 20 miles away, or to Tampa or Miami for the night and then come back. That doesn't seem to be what the plan is going, but that's all still being developed by the NBA and the Players Association and Disney as partners in this.
We looked at the possibilities being some kind of play-in arrangement as well as a playoff, just a regular continuation of the season before a playoff, or a large-scale battle royal 30-team playoff tournament structure, or they'll just select a number of teams to begin a playoffs and start a postseason. What do you think is most likely?
I think I'm starting to lean towards probably what's most likely is either they bring only the 16 teams that are currently in the playoffs. I've been told by folks with the league that they believe the spread in the East is 5 games. The spread in the West is 3.5 games. They don't feel overly bad if they say we're going to cut it, you know, the season as where it ended and bring those teams. But there is also the idea of bringing the 4 Western Conference teams that are currently outside the playoff picture, but still within striking distance, to bring them as well and do some form of play-in to kind of have the sense of fairness of we saw this through. So it's going to be some combination of those is my guess. There is still motivation to bring all 30 teams primarily to help them reach their regional sports network contracts and fulfill those. Teams are anywhere from 3 to 7 games short of fulfilling the 70-game marker, which is where the vast majority of those trigger. But that seems to be lessening by the day, the desire to bring in these teams that are really just coming to play out the string. I think they're really kind of locking into, let's get the playoff teams, or the playoff plus plan is kind of how it's being referred to.
We were laughing about this yesterday, that our buddy Joe Cowley, who covers the Bulls for the Sun-Times, he did a Twitter poll giving Bulls fans the option, would you rather the Bulls be involved in a play-in, continuing the season, in a 30-team playoff, or done for the year? 69% of Bulls fans want them done for the year. And it is completely understandable, as they've had this front office changeover and actually some real optimism, that the idea of the Bulls being somehow resurrected as the Jim Boylan zombie team is just a turnoff to Bulls fans. I wonder how many other teams are in that unique position.
Yeah, that is pretty funny. I'm a little surprised it's quite that overwhelming. But I do know folks who have said that. They're like, look, our team's terrible. I don't want to do anything that hurts our draft position. Let's just, you know, call it what it is. And from the front office and coaching side, there are a couple of front office folks that I spoke to and a couple coaches who believe, you know, hey, this doesn't make sense for us to come back. We're really only doing this for financial reasons. We're not going to play any of our star guys, any of our key players moving forward. We're just going to move on and do what we do. And I think what gets really interesting there as you kind of look at this is, you know, how do you weigh that if you're the NBA? You got to be careful. Now, a part of me says, that's not really any different than late March, early April, through the end of the season anyway. Those teams kind of play out the strings. Guys all of a sudden have back spasms or a far different connotations then, but flu-like symptoms that keep them out of games. And you're seeing, you know, the guys who maybe, you know, don't have much of a future with the team playing out the strings. So it's going to be interesting to see how they put this together. But that sentiment is not entirely unshared around the league of, let's just call it done because we're so far out of this thing.
It seems like that everybody involved is prepared to weather a positive test or tests. And I'm not exactly sure how, if it would mean some automatic quarantines. And the controversy, if somebody tests positive and they say, well, wait a second, that guy was at a practice facility with LeBron, and now LeBron is done for 2 weeks. And what that would mean and how that stuff is going to be enforced. Is that all just up in the air? And that's not even getting to the desire of the players to agree to do some of these things.
Yeah, no, I will say what's not up in the air is the fact that the NBA and the Board of Governors and the Players Association have all reached agreement that one positive test can't shut everything down. It can't be, like it was previous, because if that's going to be the case, then let's call the season done and let's start planning for how do we have the best season next year that we possibly can. So everyone's in agreement of if a player tests positive, we're going to have to treat it like an injury or like an illness during the playoffs, and that player's out for whatever the determined amount of time needs to be, and we move on. And the example that was brought to the forefront was Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson got hurt in the middle of the NBA Finals, and nobody said, well, we got to pause the finals. We can't continue. And I know it's different things, but those are the things that have been talked about. Now, from the player side, the vast majority of the players want to play. They're open. They understand the testing. They have some hesitancy around the ones I have spoken with, and this has also been reported by others. They don't love the nasal swab one where it's, jammed, feels like almost into your brain. They don't really like the idea of that. So there is, what does the testing look like? But everybody understands that testing immediately upon arrival at the single site, testing regularly throughout the entirety of the time that they're there is going to be necessary. And everybody seems to be on the same page of, hey, that's what we got to do this. And that's what we have to do.
What about access to their own families? What are they going to be sacrificing regarding that kind of contact under this plan?
Sure, yeah. So when this initially came up of a single site, it was, well, can they bring families? Is that going to be a huge issue? And it's funny, a month ago when that was an initial conversation, I talked to a player about that, and his response to me was, man, I've been with my family for 2 months. I'm ready for a break. I'm ready to go back to work. As someone who's been in the house with my family, I kind of understand that sentiment a little bit. But one of the things that they have said is, Disney is willing to work with the NBA to say, all right, if what we got to do is provide, the ability to bring the families along, that's fine. We can make that work. That's, completely doable. What seems to have changed really, and I would say the last week and a half to 2 weeks, is a lot of the players I'm talking to are starting to look at this is a business trip. I'm going there to try and win a championship, and I want to cut out any distractions that are possible. I'm kind of looking at this as an extended road trip, and off we go, and then we'll figure it out from there. So I think it's going to be some kind of mixture in there of, what do they ultimately decide on, families or not? And then if families are allowed, I don't know that you're going to see every player bring the entire family with them anyway.
We are talking with Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports. You follow him on Twitter at KeithSmithNBA. Now, I was wondering this, and maybe we'll never get an answer to this, but the absolute cultural phenomenon that ESPN's The Last Dance was, and we're still seeing the ripple effect in the memorabilia market and what this is doing for Bulls stuff and Jordan shoes, and just how, here in Chicago, we were doing our Monday shows after the Sunday broadcast were like Bulls post-game shows, and it became this thing. We knew it was going to be big, and we knew it was just going to be the right time for it. ESPN knew it. Massive numbers. Do you think the NBA, or to what extent do you think the NBA took notice of what the game can still mean, and what is something from 20 years ago where we all knew the outcome, the power of basketball, the power of basketball celebrity and basketball drama? Do you think that served to remind people of what how the game can touch people and maybe inform their desire to come back even greater?
Yeah, I think there is some truth to that. I know, talking to different folks around the league, everyone was watching, whether it was players, coaches, just about everybody was, really engrossed in that. And for guys of my age, I lived through the entire thing. So not all of it was new, but I still found myself completely enthralled every week and was, thrilled to watch it. And there's definitely from the ESPN side, the ratings, as you mentioned, were phenomenal. And the NBA has looked at it and said, hey, even some of these old broadcasts of games that they've had on, whether it be NBA TV, TV or ESPN or ABC on occasion. Those are doing pretty good. And that, I think, clearly tells them people miss basketball and people would love to have it back. And I think it's what's unfortunate for the NBA is we were down the home stretch and gearing up for the playoffs, which is, you know, generally considered to be the most exciting part of the season. And everything just got shut down. And I think the NBA knows they're really well positioned. If they can come back and give sports fans the playoffs, that this is going to really be huge for everybody. And there's the potential with, you know, baseball, the fits and starts for them to of getting back. And it started every day that passes, it looks like that seems less and less likely with all their things. And then, you know, hockey is, you know, looks like they're moving in a direction. But I think the NBA wants their share of that market and wants to be one of those leagues that comes back to take care of sports fans and their desire to watch live sports when they don't already know the results.
Before we let you go, you mentioned the regional sports network broadcast contracts and what might be salvaged there. And as I remember, certain rounds of the playoffs had been double dipped, where you could toggle back and forth between your national TNT broadcast or an ESPN broadcast and your home RSN broadcast. But now that everything would be centralized, would they continue to share the feed in that regard to help take care of some of those individual local deals? Or do you think that these broadcasts all would be solely national broadcasts?
No, I think that is still on the table. I believe that's for the first round only that they allow that, you know, the RSNs to broadcast the games in tandem with the national broadcast. And I think that is on the table. I think from what I understand is there's no real plan to change that. A lot of people have said, well, if this is hosted at Disney, at ESPN, Wide World of Sports, it's only going to be ESPN who broadcasts. And I was told that TNT will be for that broadcast. It's one or two broadcast these games. What is interesting is it sounds like there is one of the thoughts on the table is the broadcasters themselves will be remote. They may not be on the site. They may be calling these games remote like we see sometimes in international competitions and the like there. So that is a, you know, potential possibility there that we see that, and that might, you know, look a little bit different. But I think they want to do everything they can to make it work with their regional partners if at all possible.
That was Keith Smith, Yahoo Sports, on the Dan Bernstein Show today here on 670 The Score. That last comment, kind of pops out to me. I mean, a lot of what he said early on in the conversation about Disney World and how it would work. But Steve Conroy said something similar this morning to Mullion Hall. And I guess in all this talk about a return, that's really not something that we've been discussing that much. But if you stay up late for the baseball, if you're jonesing for some baseball and you see KBO, that's what's happening. You don't have to be there. Sure, you have a better vantage point. You could talk about some things going on that aren't on camera, but during these unprecedented times, you could call a game just watching the video. You could absolutely do that. Everything's weird this season, so why not? Maybe you don't have to be at the game, and maybe that's going to be the norm for at least sports in the year 2020. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670 The Score. Thanks for hanging out on this Wednesday evening. Got a couple other nuggets on the Score Rewind as we wrap up on this Wednesday. Grobber will be here at midnight on 670 The Score and the Radio.com app. Got Sports Radio 670 The Score. So last night, Jordan Malley producing my show, and at 10 o'clock we carry CBS Sports Radio for a couple of hours until Les Grobstein steps in. And Jordan has brought this up a few times. Now I have asked him about it and he's responded, but he's very excited about this. Jordan, set the scene. What happened last night when you were waiting for your shift to end at midnight?
So I was just listening to the Cubs broadcast, too, listening back to Anthony Rizzo and Joe Maddon, and my ear perked up a little bit when I heard Nagy and a caller from Alabama, and he's not even a Bears fan, but made the point to spend 3 minutes with Carrington Harrison about why Foles is overrated, so I thought it was pretty interesting.
Okay, so the CBS Sports Radio last night, Carrington Harrison, a KC guy, so he knows a lot about Nagy, covered him for quite some time. So it was a smart move by him. He wants to talk some Bears. He wants to talk about Matt Nagy.
and this is the result.
Let's go ahead to Birmingham, Alabama, and let's talk to Buck. Buck, you're on CBS Sports Radio. Give me a team.
Yes, sir. How you doing today? As a man without a team, because you know the Raiders left and gone to Vegas, I'm going to be unbiased about it. When you got a Super Bowl MVP quarterback on your team and a snot-knocking defense, the monsters of the midway going to surprise a lot of folks. It's no way that you can't start you can start Trubisky up there in Chicago with a Super Bowl winning championship quarterback like Nick Foles. Man, let me tell you, what Trubisky did to the Chicago Bears, he needed to be run out of town on the rail. Man, the number one defense, he killed the defense. Now, on another note,
before you move on. Do you have confidence in a Matt Nagy? This is a guy who last year says, yeah, I didn't want to play my starters, but in the preseason this year, I'm going to. I mean, it's kind of tricky statement there.
He's the coach. That's the coach, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, he's not on the field.
Not on the field, but last year he decides who's on the field. Last season, he said, I'm not going
to
put my –
He's going to have to play that starting quarter. The Chicago fan base is not going to allow him to play.
Buck, do you listen?
Let me tell you, man.
Do you listen or do you just talk? Which one, Buck?
Both. Go ahead.
Thank you. Let's do one at a time here, Buck. Listen, Matt Nagy might be the head coach, but he decides who goes out on the field. Last season, he didn't play any of his starters in the preseason, and they basically had a terrible start to the season. And he's changing his mind this year. And, Buck, I must say, I don't know if everybody's as high on Nick Foles as you are. When it comes to Trubisky, probably. But I don't know if Nick Foles has the savior gene in him again.
Let me ask you one question. Did Nick Foles defeat the vaunted Patriots and everybody? You forgot, didn't you?
I didn't forget anything.
I'm just trying to remind you. Well, let me go ahead and finish my conversation.
Buck, there's no forgetting. Do you remember where Nick Foles was last year?
He was injured, man.
What happened? So why is he no longer there? Where was he?
That was the scum team he was with. He didn't have the type of defense that he got in Chicago, man.
Well, he doesn't. He's going to be on the field the whole way. So he's going to be.
Man,
so do me a favor, Buck.
Believe it.
Buck, I know what he did. Do me a favor, Buck. He's a Super Bowl winning MVP. Buck, you don't know how to listen, do you? Buck doesn't know how to listen.
You talking, man? I know you're the host, but I'm going on the facts, baby.
Yeah, Buck, you are going on the facts, but you're talking about facts that were a little while ago. Buck, I don't know. Maybe Buck missed what happened with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Maybe Buck missed what Nick Foles has done his entire career. I know he went on an amazing run.
You talking, man? I know you're the host, but I'm going on the facts, baby.
All right, that was pretty good. I'll be honest. Sometimes producers are like, something's really funny. I think we should bring it back. I think we should play something.
Buck, do you listen or do you just talk? Which one, Buck?
A lot of times it disappoints. But Jordan Malley was right on that one. That was worth it. My guy, Buck. How come we can't get Buck from Alabama to call in? I think he's a little too optimistic on the Bears. And I understand where Carrington's coming from. But that was definitely entertaining.
Let's go ahead to Birmingham, Alabama, and let's talk to Buck. Buck, you're on CBS Sports Radio. Give me a team.
Buck, do you listen or do you just talk?
Which one, Buck?
Both. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Let's do one at a time here, Buck.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's what sports radio callers do. They don't do a whole lot of listening. They call because they want to talk and they want to listen to themselves talk. Some of them, not everybody out there. But he gave us a Trubisky, and it's just too perfect that his name's Buck. That's a real name, right?
You talking, man? I know you're the host, but I'm going on the facts, baby.
He's going on the facts, baby.
Jordan, that reminds me of some of the great calls we used to get during White Sox postgame when you were first becoming a big fan of 670 The Score.
Oh, that literally made me addicted in the summers.
Yeah, some good stuff. I want to thank my producer, Jordan Malley, tonight and for joining me on the show. We had Brian Perez from NBC Sports Chicago on the Bears, Jeffrey Benson at Circus Sports, Chris Altruda talking about sports betting, what's happening at Arlington Park, Bill Shea from The Athletic. Some fantastic guests tonight. I'll tweet out links to the interviews in case you missed it on Twitter, at Joe0670. At Joe0670, full podcasts will be posted on 670thescore.com. Grobber will be here at midnight. Maybe you'll hear Buck from Alabama calling on CBS Sports Radio next. I'll be back Monday night. Looks like next week we've got a lot of long shows. Hopefully we have a lot to talk about. Get some deals done, baseball, NBA. Let's go. Let's get ready for sports. Hopefully that's the case, because I guess we're not doing any more replays of games, at least for the time being. So that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Hopefully we'll be talking about some start dates in the next couple of weeks. Keep it here for CBS Sports Radio, then Grobber at midnight. Talk to you next week on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Let's go ahead to Birmingham, Alabama, and let's talk to Buck. Buck, you're on CBS Sports Radio. Give me a team. Buck, do you listen or do you just talk? Which one, Buck?
Both. Go ahead.
Thank you. We'll take. Let's do one at a time.
You talking,
here,
man? I know you're the host, but I'm going on the facts, baby.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.